Thank you, Jane, for talking with me again today. And way back when, well, it seems like forever ago, but it was probably only a couple months ago, and you were sweet enough to let me talk to you about various topics for my rookie class. But at the time, you said to me that sometime we should chat about the whole issue of school lunches and how to get better food into the schools. And you said something to me that I thought was fascinating, and I'll tell about that in a minute. But I wanted to tell you thank you for letting me talk with you again.
Oh, I love it. It's a pleasure, Kelly.
And what you said to me was that getting better food into schools is really not a difficult thing. And that fascinated me because anybody else you talk to says, well, it's just too hard, it's too expensive. So what did you mean by that?
Well, first of all, not only is it not so hard, but it's also not expensive. As a matter of fact, one of the problems that schools are facing now is most of them are paying way too much money for food. They're paying way, way more money than they should for what they're actually getting. I think the best way to explain this is to use a few simple illustrations, you know, that we can all relate to with the foods that we buy. So, for example, we all know if you go into a theater and you buy a bucket of popcorn, I frankly don't have any idea what they're charging now for popcorn. I know it's really, really high.
Yeah.
And if you stop and think about it, you know, it's a handful of corn kernels that you're actually buying. What kind of a profit is that? Well, movie theater owners know there's big money in that popcorn. So here you have a product that is very, very cheap to buy, but you can sell it for a very inflated price. Another example would be instant oatmeal packets. If you buy a tub of oatmeal, you know, what you're going to pay is very minimal. If you buy it in the form of packets with the typically, they have artificial colors, flavors, and all sorts of junk in them. You're going to pay a very inflated price. You might pay as much as 10 times the amount that you would pay for the plain oatmeal. But however, it's really easy to take a scoop of oatmeal, put it in a dish, and microwave it if you want. You don't have to buy the very, very expensive individual packets. And if you microwave your own, you can add your own natural ingredients. For example, if you like cinnamon and brown sugar, just add some cinnamon and some brown sugar.
Yeah.
Or if you like maple syrup flavor, put a little maple syrup in. Or scoop out a spoonful of strawberry jam and stir it in. Or buy some dehydrated strawberries if you like. So a consumer knows that the very minimal advantage, if you will, I don't really think it's an advantage to have those little packets because you have to wrestle with them. But just by doing it yourself and doing it more wisely, cooking smarter, you can save a whole lot of money. Now, here's one more example. I just recently bought a rice pilaf mix. It was a little box, and it was enough for four servings. I paid $2 for it, which doesn't sound too bad. But when you really take a close look at that box, I paid $2 for what is primarily about a half cup of rice and some seasonings. Now, if a school were to use those convenience foods, which aren't that convenient, they would be spending a whole lot of money. Whereas if they bought a big bag of rice and add their own seasonings, it would cost a fraction of that. So when you extrapolate that and figure, here schools are buying, first of all, they're not even food half of the time, but they're buying highly, highly processed stuff. And it wouldn't be difficult for a cafeteria to mix up a great big container of plain rice and seasonings and cook that instead of cooking the assuming they do any cooking at all, which many don't. So it's stuff like this. Another good example is how much corn are you actually getting when you buy a box of cornflakes? You're getting a small amount of something that a company has taken and processed and puffed it and fluffed it and all that stuff. Now, you may decide that, yeah, you're going to pay $4 for a box of cornflakes because it's not like popcorn where you can make your own. You know, you can't make your own cornflakes. So, yeah, you're going to pay more for that. Or you're going to pay $4 for a big bag of potato chips that probably has the equivalent of one potato in it. However, schools, if they're careful about what products they buy processed and what products they put together themselves, which dishes they can easily put together themselves, they can save a whole lot of money. And so, this is what one of my colleagues is doing. Yes, please go ahead.
So here's, isn't this what schools used to do, though, now that I think about it?
Yeah.
Because when we were growing up, our school lunches were really good. I mean, we all wanted to eat hot lunch, and they were homemade meals. And I'm assuming they did the same thing that you're talking about. They just, you know, cooked in big batches, and they didn't use processed food. So why did they get away from it, do you think, in the first place? Because if it's not because of money, why is it just the convenience and not having to pay the manpower to cook it?
Well, you know, I think what happened, and what happens even today in schools, is that the people who make these decisions don't really understand that food is important.
Yeah.
You know, everybody gives it lip service, eat healthy, yada, yada, yada. But they really don't understand. And they figure, well, we'll save money. We won't pay for a stove or a cooktop. You know, we'll save money. We'll source it out. We'll have a great big company come, and a rep from that great big company, just like the reps from the cola giants, they come and they say, oh, we're going to make it easier for you, and you can hire one fewer, you know, the lunch ladies, and you don't have to buy a stove, and it's all ready to go, and it's all packaged. And the people who make these decisions, I think, very, very rarely ever understand that food is really important, that food not only affects our health, but our behavior and our ability to focus and learn. And I think they just kind of got carried away. And I've heard from food service directors that their job is considered of really, very, really low importance in the school, which is a shame because it should be the other way around. So I don't know. Those are just a few guesses as to what might have gotten wrong. But very often people, you know, they want to do some budget cutting. The number of children needing expensive special services keeps going up, so they look to cut money. Well, they don't realize that one of the main reasons why so many more children need special services is because they're not getting food and they're not able to focus when they go back from lunch. So often teachers will say, well, I can do work with the kids in the morning, but after they've eaten lunch in the school cafeteria, forget about it. So it's just, I think, frankly, I hate to say this about education and our education system, but I think there's just a whole lot of ignorance there.
That's crazy that you said that, because I always thought that when the teacher said that, that the kids were better, you know, to teach in the morning. So they, at our school too, they put all the specials in the afternoons, like gym and art and the things that they don't have to focus as much. And, you know, everyone thinks it's because, oh, they're fresh because, you know, they slept all night long and the morning's a good time. But now that I think about it, you're probably right. It has more to do with what they just put in their little bodies at lunch than,
Absolutely. Wow,
I never thought about that before.
Yeah. And it's kind of like the day after Halloween is the day that our schools in Northern Virginia always had a holiday. They had a teacher's work day, the first school day after Halloween, because they knew the kids were going to be flying all over the place.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And not only the school lunch, it could be the M&Ms that they used in order to do their math lesson, and the Jolly Ranchers the teacher gives out if somebody does something, you know, that's positive.
Guess what they're doing at school this week?
Oh, no.
They're doing meat tests, and guess what they all get to suck on? For the meat test, they all get two Jolly Ranchers. Driving
man.
Me crazy.
Well, if they get that before they are tested, you're going to have problems.
I know.
It's not just the academics. In fact, our October newsletter has an article written by one of our moms whose children were in T-ball. And they never won any games. They didn't pay attention. They were, you know, they were all over the place, but not playing ball. And the coach would bring Gatorade and artificial candy for the kids every time. And she said to the coach, she said, I want to try an experiment. And he agreed to let her bring the snacks. So she brought water and natural candy. She didn't take away the sugar. She brought natural candies. And there are plenty of those around. And guess what? The kids focused. They hit the ball. They caught the ball. They paid attention. Mm-hmm. They weren't, you know, lying all over the benches. They were actually winning ball games.
Wow.
So it's not just sports. Humans need nourishment. They need to eat food. And when instead of eating real food with vitamins, minerals, etc., they're eating things that have petroleum-based dyes, because those pretty colors don't come from fruits and vegetables, for the majority of them. Things like red 40, yellow 5, yellow 6, blue 1, these are petroleum derivatives, and humans don't do well when they eat petroleum. So not only are these kids in the school cafeteria getting a whole lot of toxic stuff, but they are missing the vitamins, minerals, the nutrients that they really need in order to function. And as if it isn't bad enough that food dyes and most of the artificial flavorings come from petroleum, but dyes are legally permitted to have toxic contaminants. They're allowed to have lead. They're allowed to have mercury. They're allowed to have arsenic. They're just not supposed to have too much of it.
Wow.
And, of course, the really potent cancer-causing chemical, which is listed as a poisonous substance, is benzidine. They can have that. They do have that. They're not supposed to, but they do anyway. So what we are putting into these little bodies is such a long way from what humans ate and lived on for many years. Our food supply, within a very short period of time, has gone from being, you know, ordinary stuff, the meat balls the ladies made, the lunch ladies, the mashed potatoes that they actually mashed from potatoes. It's gotten to the point where this stuff is so synthetic, it's so filled with weird, strange chemicals, that you really can't call it food anymore.
That is so sad.
Let me just mention this, Kelly. I may not have made it too clear. The more highly processed a food is, in most cases, the more expensive it is. So when those lunch ladies bought the potatoes and boiled them and mashed them, they didn't have all this packaging. They didn't have advertising. They didn't have executive salaries. They didn't have the salespeople to pay. They didn't have the big trucks to pay for in the factory and all the machinery and stuff like that. When you just buy regular food, particularly if you buy it in quantity, you can get a lot of really good food for a very reasonable price. And then you can fill it in. Schools get commodity food. They get meat and cheese and canned tomatoes. I mean, you can make your own pizza with natural ingredients for a fraction of what you would pay if you bought it processed from one of the major distributors.
So this is so interesting to me because, as you know, we've figured out around here how to source our food in better places, you know, just find a lot better food that's real food rather than buying so much processed stuff around our house. But
sure.
I just don't know how can people then take this, what should be the first step to take this to their schools?
Right, exactly. Well, I would say the first step is to visit our website, and the website is school-lunch.org. Now, one of the things that, and also they can certainly contact the Feingold Association, and we'll be happy to help them. Another website where they can more easily reach the Feingold Association is ADHDdiet.org, ADHDdiet.org. Now, one of the things that most people, whether they be parents or professionals or whoever working in this area, don't really have a grip on, I think, is that schools have a variety of ways to go. First of all, let's say that you're talking about a school that uses a lot of highly processed foods from a major distributor, and let's say they don't want to make any changes. They want to continue to use this sort of food. Well, they can, because if you go to a distributor and you tell them, I don't want that chocolate chip cookie with the artificial flavor in the chips. I want a chocolate chip cookie with natural flavoring. They can get it for you. Chances are it's not going to cost any more money. Or if you say, I don't want that so-called fruit juice, it's nothing more than sugar, water, and a whole bunch of petroleum-based chemicals, tell them, I want a fruit drink that's actually made with fruit. Well, that's available too. It's very similar to what a parent does when they're on the Feingold diet. If they want to use convenience foods, and they can go to their supermarket, and they can find convenience foods that don't contain things like artificial colors, flavors, and preservatives. Schools can do the same thing. So a school can, without spending any more money, they can insist that the distributor give them the versions, which they have available, that just don't have the worst of the additives. So instead of heating up a mac and cheese mix with yellow 5 and 6, the school would heat up a mac and cheese mix that would be colored with beta-carotene or annatto, a natural coloring. That's the first level. That's a very simple thing to do, and schools have done that. A second level, if the school wanted to go this direction, would be to make up a few things. Buy a lot of processed things as they have been, but in natural versions, and then figure out, okay, where am I spending a lot of money? Maybe it's the salad dressing, and maybe they're paying, you know, $2 or $3 for a little bottle, and they realize that in 5 minutes or less, I can mix up a batch of my own salad dressing for a fraction of the cost. And they may pick things here and there where they want to save money, or instead of the cereal in the tiny little boxes, they'll buy the cereal in the bulk, great big bulk pack for a fraction of the cost, and then just scoop it out for the kids. There are a lot of options, and then it goes all the way to the very healthy things where some schools are doing a lot of food preparation from scratch, and some schools even have gardens in the schoolyard. They have schoolyard gardens. I mean, that's kind of the ultimate and the sort of thing that Jamie Oliver showed on TV. These are wonderful options, but there are baby steps that a school can take. Now, the school that does go to super healthy food, they're actually still going to save a lot of money. Why? Because the cost to educate a child who is reacting to the synthetic chemicals in their food, to the junky factory food, these kids who are diagnosed as having ADD or ADHD, I'm not saying every child with ADD is simply reacting to food additives, but an awful lot of them are. And when a school has a child who needs a special class, special education, special services, the cost to educate that child can easily be doubled. So if it costs a school $10,000 to educate a child in the mainstream classes, then the child who needs special ed, it can cost double that. It can cost $20,000 a year. So if a school can move one child from special ed to the mainstream, and they can easily do that if they feed them good food, that's $10,000 a year right there. And boy, can you buy a lot of good stuff for that. Now, I really want to tell you one thing that is totally related to this. Back in the late 1970s, from 1979 through 1983, the New York City school system, this is a huge system, biggest in the country, I believe, with over 800 schools, they changed their food. And they gradually started removing the worst of the additives and replacing it with just plain real food. And what they found was not only did the test scores for all of the children rise dramatically from the 39th to over the 55th percentile in the tests they gave. Yes. And this was just changing school food. They didn't make any other changes. But here's the other thing that happened. While they were feeding the children the factory food, the number of kids who were two or more years behind academically was over 12%. That's a lot of children. That's an awful lot of expenses because it's so expensive to remediate these problems. After they had changed the food, the number of children dropped from over 12% to under 5%.
Ooh, that's so cool.
Yeah. Now, just I haven't even done the math. Today's figures would say, you know, the number of children, $10,000 per year per child, the school would save for every one of those kids who didn't need to be in a special classroom. We're talking about billions of dollars here. I did the math a little bit. I was talking with a show host in California, and they have about 6 million children in school. And if 10% of the children, this is a fairly typical figure, require special ed, at $10,000 per child, we came up to $3 billion they could save very easily by making some modest changes in their school food. So it isn't what people think it is. They think they have all these misconceptions. It's just like people think healthy food isn't going to taste good. And I'll say to them, well, do you think gourmet food tastes good? Oh, well, of course gourmet food tastes good. Well, gourmet food, healthy food, you know, very often they're really the same thing.
Right.
So it's just a lot of misconceptions. And we have the case histories. We have the school menu. I alluded to my colleague in Vermont who totally changed the school food and is saving a fortune for the school on what she's serving. And what she's serving sounds so good. I mean, I know you talked about loving your school food. Imagine going into a cafeteria that serves turkey and provolone focaccia with pesto mayonnaise, cranberry raspberry salad with walnuts and feta cheese, spaghetti with homemade marinara sauce and garlic. This is wonderful stuff. Now, she also serves pizza, cheese quesadilla, hot dogs and stuff, but in their natural version. So schools can do
this.
It.
This is great to hear this. I just hope that I can get this out there and that maybe some people in my local district will listen to this interview, because I think a lot of them don't realize the strong connections between food and behavior and learning. And if they did, and if they saw, like what you're telling me, is that you can actually save money, then there's
Absolutely.
Really no reason not to do it.
Absolutely. This colleague in Vermont, she is the food service director for a tiny little community. They only have two schools in the whole community, and they were losing serving the factory food, the usual stuff. This tiny, poor community where more than half the kids are on either reduced or free lunches, they were losing $27,000 a year on the cafeteria junk that they were serving. Kathy came in and serving this wonderful sort of thing. Here's another one. Three cheese focaccia melt with tomato and pesto. she's not losing any money. And what's more, she told me that she can make a pizza, an all-natural pizza, using frozen pizza dough. It's not hard to find natural frozen pizza dough. And commodity foods from the government. She can make a pizza that serves 8 people, and her cost is only $3.
Wow. That is awesome.
Yeah, it's being done. It can be done. There are just so many misconceptions about the whole thing. And, you know, if you go back, if schools could kind of close their eyes and go back and think about the things you told me when you were a child, what was it like? What was the school food like? And you know what? I bet you, if you remember back, that very few children were asthmatic, that ear infections were not considered a routine part of childhood, that childhood diabetes, depression, and obesity were not health epidemics the way they are today. You just think about it. What was different?
And the hyperactivity disorders, you didn't hear.
Yeah.
I mean, there might have been like a boy that was naughty once in a while or something.
Absolutely.
But not like you see now.
And there always has been. There have always been kids who have been difficult or naughty or sometimes really pretty bad, but not like today.
Yeah.
There were no behavior classrooms. That's a polite word for a classroom that is so small there are almost as many teachers as children because the children are so out of control. So many things. I mean, everybody acknowledges, oh my gosh, we've got all these problems, the health problems, the learning problems, the behavior problems. Well, you know what, people? Think about it. What has changed? Maybe food isn't the whole answer. Maybe there are other things too. But we know that eating petroleum in place of food is bad for humans.
Yeah, it's common sense.
Right, and we know because we have been helping parents since 1976 and have had decades of successful experience, we know that many children are failing in school even though they're extremely bright. They're sick for no reason other than that they're eating petroleum tainted with arsenic, mercury, lead. You know, hey, maybe it has something to do with it. But to get people to understand that food is not just about health. I mean, people today understand that good food is connected with good health. But you know what? When we started this, when our family started doing this and using the Feingold program in the mid-1970s, very few people understood that food was related to health. That may be hard to believe, but it's true. Children were given Tang. We gave our kids orange juice, and we were considered a bit strange. If you ate yogurt, ooh, you were a hippie.
That's and true. If you ate remember that, actually.
Yeah, do you? And if you ate granola, you never admitted it.
Yeah.
But today, and one other thing, if a manufacturer ever put the word healthy on his packaging, if a food manufacturer ever claimed his food was healthy, nobody would buy it.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's hard to imagine there was such a day. But not long before that was the time when the trucks would drive down the neighborhood streets spraying out DDT. And the children literally would run behind it and they'd get sprinkled. Uh-huh. And they'd think it was fun. You know, it's like a water sprinkler on there that watering the grass. There were so many things that were weird that people just didn't understand. Now, today, thank goodness, we don't sprinkle DDT on our kids, but we feed them with all sorts of garbage that, you know, nobody even knows what is in that package.
Now, when you're talking about the DDT, you're talking about the, like, on somebody's lawns or something? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, what they did was during the summer, they would have trucks. Yeah, you're too young to remember this. I should They would have trucks go down neighborhood streets, and it's kind of like, you know, there are trucks that spray water to clean the pavement, mm-hmm. particularly in cities, and they would spray out this pesticide because it was supposed to be, I don't know whether they were trying to kill mosquitoes or what they were doing, but they would go through neighborhoods spraying DDT, and the chemical companies had a little slogan. And they had this little cartoon with a housewife in her apron and these farm animals all singing, DDT is good for me. Yeah, this was when almost everybody, you know, adults smoked. It was just a very, very different time. And, you know, we understand today, you know, that that's not a good idea. When I was growing up, there was no such thing as a seatbelt.
Yeah.
And if you went to ride your bike, I mean, who wore a helmet? Nobody ever heard of wearing a helmet. That was for football.
So isn't it funny how in some ways we have gotten a lot smarter and a lot better, but then why is it in our food that we got so dumb?
Well, I think there are a lot of reasons. First of all, you would think that something like a food diet that is in not just food and beverages, but medicine and toothpaste and cosmetics, you would think, with all the media resources that we have, with the television, radio, print media, et cetera, you would think that people would know what it was. I mean, almost everybody, not Feingold members and not you, I'm sure, but most people put this stuff on their skin and in their mouth and swallow it, or with mouthwash or toothpaste, whether or not they swallow it, it still gets in their body. Most people are exposed to synthetic dyes every single day, and yet when I give workshops, I ask if people know, you know, what the dye comes from, and I ask if they know how many cherries are in cherry jello. They may know that there are no cherries in cherry jello, but virtually nobody has a clue. Well, what is that red 40 and what is that yellow 5 and why is that red velvet cake such a pretty color? Mm-hmm. Because they put a whole bottle of dye in it. Why is it that well-educated people know so little about what's really going on in their food? I don't know. I don't have a good answer, but I can tell you that the people who don't want you to know are making a lot of money selling you food because, well, they're selling you stuff that looks like food, actually.
Mm-hmm.
They're making a lot of money because they're able to use artificial color and flavor instead of real food. So, you know, it's an example is if you set up a little lemonade stand and you wanted to sell lemonade that was made from real sugar and real lemons, it would be more expensive than if you bought a bottle of powder that had yellow dye and artificial flavor and high fructose corn syrup and just mix it with water. It's really, most of this is about money.
Well, you know, I have a theory too, now that I think about it. I think that part of it could be that we have all gotten so busy. We're so busy, mm-hmm. busy. So I think we get in these traps where we think it's all about convenience. And I'm just as guilty. I mean, I love convenience. And I don't compromise.
Well, so do I.
Yeah,
and I buy convenience foods, but I know which ones to buy.
But I think that everyone's kind of susceptible to the advertising, like you said,
mm-hmm.
that they spend millions of dollars on, and the little
That's
kids
right.
are begging for the brightly colored food, and mom's like, oh, at least he'll eat it, and,
yep,
you
yep,
know, let's,
absolutely.
It fills him up, you know. And
but, you know, there's another part of this, Kelly, that I think we really need to bring in, and that is that when you or I or anybody goes to the supermarket, we should be able to have a fairly good assurance that the things that we're putting in our grocery cart will not hurt our family. I mean, that's what the FDA is about. And I think that most people, I certainly used to think this, I thought, well, gee, if an additive was harmful, the government would never allow it.
mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of the reason. This is the job of the FDA. This is what they're supposed to do. We have government agencies that are supposed to watch out for our environment, for our food, for our medicine, for all these things. And if you start digging around and talk with people who have really done this research, these agencies are broken. They don't work anymore. The FDA stopped working around 1980. Now, if you read the books and look at the investigative journalism about these things, these agencies simply aren't working. And that's horrific, because not only are we taxpayers paying for these things and paying for the salaries of these head honchos who are preventing the agencies from working, but, you know, think about it this way. If you're driving along and you drive over a bridge, should you worry that maybe the people who were responsible for making sure the bridge was safe, should you worry that maybe they weren't doing their job? Do you pull over, get out, and go down the hillside and start to inspect the beams and see whether the bridge is going to fall down? You know, you just assume there are people whose job it is to make sure that the roads are safe, the bridges are safe. If you need to call 911 and get an ambulance, you shouldn't have to worry about, gee, I wonder whether they're doing their job.
Mm-hmm.
If you smell smoke and you call the fire department, should you have to think, gee, I wonder if the fire department is going to come? Well, we just take for granted, and we should be able to take for granted, that the government agency that is set up to protect us is protecting us.
You know what? That is a great point, Jane, because that maybe is the basis of the problem, why such, like you said, educated people don't realize
mm-hmm.
that all the harm that they're doing to their families by feeding them some of the fake foods in the grocery store. But that's probably why. You're probably right,
right.
Because they're expecting that
yeah.
the government's doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Wow, and they should expect
point.
That.
Yeah.
And they also expect that the Department of Agriculture, which oversees the food program in the schools, that they are actually making sure that the children are given healthy food. You know, the school lunch program began, oh, decades ago, almost 100 years ago, because children were undernourished. It also began because farmers had excess and they needed to find a place to sell the extra food. But the purpose of the school lunch was to nourish children so that they could be strong and they could learn and they could function. Now, what started out as a well-meaning solution has actually become the biggest problem. And yes, the vending machines that are still around are a problem, but you know what, Kelly? The stuff in the vending machines, as bad as it is, and the stuff at many fast food restaurants, as bad as that is, it's not as bad as what schools are serving in their cafeteria. There are some schools serving good stuff. There are some schools serving, you know, half and half. But I would venture to guess the majority of schools are serving things that are unbelievably bad. And my favorite example of this is a cheese quesadilla that takes an entire page to list all the stuff in this. Now, here, let me read you a few of the things. Of course, it has artificial flavor and color, which would make it a no-no on Feingold. Here's one of the ingredients, cheddar-flavored mozzarella cheese substitute. I don't know what that is. Here's another one, mozzarella cheese-type flavor.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, these are things that nobody knows what they are. Now, here's one of the last things in this long, long list of chemicals. Polydimethyl siloxane. Mm. That's in the cheese quesadilla served in many schools, institutions, et cetera. Why, I would be very surprised if you knew what polydimethyl siloxane is.
No, I don't remember. I think you told me before, but I forgot.
Okay. Well, you might not want to know, but I'm going to tell you anyway. It's silly putty.
Oh.
This is in the cheese quesadilla. Now, how hard is it to make a real cheese quesadilla? You need a tortilla, some cheese, put a little olive oil in the pan, and there you go. The tortillas are very inexpensive. Schools can get commodity cheese at a very, very low cost, real cheese, too. Why couldn't they do that? My friend in Vermont does that. She can feed the entire school system in this little community. She can make cheese quesadillas for everybody for $17.
What?
For everybody.
How does she do that?
Well, she uses commodity cheese, and tortillas are very inexpensive.
Tortillas,
and a little olive oil.
Tortilla labels are kind of scary, I think, though. Have you found some that are halfway decent?
Yes, yes. It's very similar to a lot of the things that we find in the Feingold Association. Part of what we do is to find which products are okay. We don't worry about the ones that are not okay. So we would look at the ingredient label, which is what she does, and she finds the source where she can get these things at a reasonable price that are natural and free of the worst of the additives. Now, it may not be organic, but it would be, by our standards, a very good cheese case, or a very good tortilla, I should say. And again, the cheese, schools get lots and lots of cheese from the government. So she can do it, and again, you know, part of it is that she's very talented. I don't know whether she uses magic, too, but she can feed everybody for $17.
Well, that what you just said brings up another point that I wanted to make. And the other day I linked to a article about a woman, and I can't remember where she was from, but mm-hmm. she had a really good quote. She was trying to change things around in their local schools to, mm-hmm. you know, have a lot better food. And one thing she said was they had to, like you said, take baby steps. And, you know, for example, the apple is not an organic apple, but at least it's mm-hmm. no longer an apple turnover.
Yes.
And it's
yes.
just an apple, you know. And so I like yes. that idea that, like, if I wanted to come in, like, part of me, it would be hard. Like, if I wanted to come in and help things in my school lunch mm-hmm. program, I would think, oh, but what kind of meat are they still feeding them? Like, where does this meat come from? And, you
right.
know, it would be hard for me. But at the same time, I'd have to tell myself that baby steps, if you get them off this
yeah.
crap, and even a little bit makes a difference. Because even you said, if they're not changing the food that these kids are eating at home, just changing what they're eating at school is making a
mm-hmm.
difference, right?
Oh, yes, it can make a huge difference. But as far as getting schools to change their food, I think it would be wonderful for one person to come in as a volunteer, but there really are more effective ways to go about it. And that's something that is also on our website at school-lunch.org. Years ago, back in the early 1980s, after we saw what had happened in the New York City schools, where with no extra expense, they just improved the foods that they were serving. They got better versions of the same foods that they were getting from the distributors. and the test scores went way, way up. Well, a group of moms in Northern Virginia, myself included, decided we wanted to try to get the same thing in our school. And let me warn you that trying to go from the bottom up and work with the food service people usually doesn't work. Sometimes you may be lucky and have a food service director who is really interested and motivated. But what we found and what so many people find is these are the folks who are making the bad decisions. And they don't want somebody coming and suggesting they do things differently. And if you saw the Jamie Oliver shows, I mean, you know what I'm talking
about.
Yes,
those were good, weren't they?
Yeah, they were fabulous. These are the people who are creating the problems, and they don't want you to tell them. But what we did was we put out petitions. Now, this was long before there was any such thing as the Internet. So we put out paper petitions in the libraries and the health food stores, and we gathered several thousand signatures just from average citizens, voters, and we collected these and presented them to the school board. Now, school board people want to be reelected, and if they know there are several thousand people in the community who aren't happy with the way things are, you know, that's a tremendous motivation. So we presented these petitions to the school board. We said, here's what we want. We didn't tell them what to feed the children. We said we want food that does not have artificial colors, flavors, certain preservatives, monosodium glutamate, and today we would also add an aspartame, the synthetic sweetener. So we just said we want you to give our children food free of these harmful chemicals. That was it. And they took it from there. Well, they don't want to have voting citizens mad at them, so they delegated it to the superintendent and told him to arrange to have a pilot program set up in three of the schools. The superintendent doesn't want angry parents, you know, coming to his office, so he delegated it down to the food service director, who had been the cause of the problem to begin with. Well, when the command came from the boss, the food service director and the food service department did what they were told to do. They went to the distributors. They found the foods that qualified. They found the things, whatever it be, whether it be cookies without artificial flavor, meat without monosodium glutamate, etc. They made the changes. It wasn't difficult. It didn't cost any more money. And the food was very, very good. The children liked it. It was a pretty simple thing. It was all accomplished in a period of about a year from beginning to end, as I recall. It was a long time ago. And for many years, they had food that they served that didn't have these additives. Now, why they gradually abandoned that program and went back to the old factory food and the page-long cheesecake of the ingredients, I have no idea. But it can be done. It doesn't cost more. The food tastes good. And as a matter of fact, you can find that if you go to eat dinner at the home of a Feingold family, you might have food that you don't realize is any different from any other food. It just is, if there's mac and cheese that's kind of orangey, it would be colored with annatto or carotene. The fruit punch might be made with cranberry and raspberry juice instead of Red 40. So it's very easy. This is what Feingold does. We show people how to make simple changes. And what is being done in kitchens can easily be done elsewhere. So if any parent is motivated to want to change the school lunch, I suggest you go to our school-lunch.org website, because if you make the same mistakes other people have made, trying to do too many things, trying to make nice and do committee work and all that stuff, you know, a year or two from now, you're going to be in the same place.
That is good advice. Okay, so my next question, though, is, you know, just as I would hope that people at home who maybe are switching from, like we talked about this before, switching from, you know, the one box to another without additives, I like how you said then sometimes the next step, like at home, I would hope the next step would be that people would make more homemade meals and less from boxes. And at schools, you said sometimes then they'll start, you know, adding in like a few homemade meals. And how do you get them then, once you get them to choose foods that don't have the additives but may still be processed, how do you then get them to start adding in a few more homemade meals now and then?
Well, what I would suggest that people do when they want their schools to change, first of all, you have to be the squeaky wheel, in my opinion. My experience has been that being nice and being pleasant and cooperative isn't always the best approach. After you demand, not request, but demand, that they stop feeding children the dyes, which are known to cause cancer and all sorts of problems, that they stop feeding children monosodium glutamate and all the hidden cousins that are linked with obesity, by the way, that they get rid of the high fructose corn syrup. After these demands are met, which are really not that hard to do, and the Feingold Association will always be glad to help any person, any school district, whatever. We've been doing this for over 30 years, and we know it isn't difficult. You do that first. That's the first step. And then once that's in and it's working well, and hopefully the folks at the school will be keeping track of the fact that fewer children are going to have behavior problems, that fewer children are going to need special services. But once a better school lunch is there, then the next year or 2 years later, go back and say, okay, thanks, that's wonderful. Now here's what we want you to do in addition. We want you to do this or that. Now, you might have a food service director who's bright, who's receptive, who buys into this, and she will easily understand. She may even come up with these thoughts herself or himself. But, yeah, just making this or that from scratch, you know, you can save a lot of money. Instead of buying a package of a so-called helper dinner that really is nothing more than a packet of MSG and corn syrup and a little bit of macaroni, you know, you can buy a big bin of macaroni, you know, and make your own and open a can of tomatoes. There are so many ways around this that people don't think about until they really start looking into it. So, again, the bottom line is this. Go for getting rid of the worst of the chemicals first. There's no lack of research that shows how damaging they are. Go for that first. Then after that, look into some more things. Then maybe in another year or so, maybe you'll even have interest in schoolyard gardens. There are things that teachers can do. Some teachers will not give out candy. They'll give stickers or they'll give other rewards that are non-food rewards. Maybe you don't have to have so many birthday parties. If you think back, now you're much younger than I, if I think back to parties in school, there was always a Valentine's Day party, maybe a Halloween, maybe a Christmas party, but we didn't have parties all the time. Every day wasn't, you know, a celebration. That would be another thing that could be done. We have a wonderful experiment that one of our teenagers came up with where she did a science fair experiment. She took wheat berries, and you can find this through our website.
Oh, yeah. Keep telling about this, but this is what yeah. My readers will remember. I posted about this recently.
Okay, great. Yeah, that's where you take the wheat berries, the kernels of wheat before they're ground into flour, and she had six little bowls, and she put wheat berries in each of the little bowls, and then she put water in each. And in the one, she put red food dye. In the next, she put yellow, etc. And then in one, she put a packet of Equal, which is aspartame. And the last one is just pure water. And in a matter of 5 to 6 days, I forgot to tell you. She let them soak for 4 hours, and then she transferred them and put them in potting soil. Then it's only a matter of days before these things are growing. And you can watch and see what happens with the wheat berries that have red dye and yellow dye and aspartame. These are stunted, deformed, very sickly-looking plants compared to the plants that were watered with pure water. The plants are lush and green and tall. The root system is healthy, whereas the others are pretty bad. Now, what my fantasy is that teachers would have an experiment like this, a display like this on the windowsill. Hopefully they still have windows in the classes, even though they don't open. They would have this sort of an experiment. Even five-year-olds will understand. Living things need nourishment. When they don't get it, things go wrong. No parent of a newborn would feed them the sort of thing that they feed their three-year-old. Well, why do you have to be careful about what you feed a newborn? Well, their brain is growing, their muscles are growing, their nerves are growing, their bones are growing, everything's growing and developing. Well, when a child gets to be 3 or 4 or 5, do they stop growing? Does their brain stop developing? You know, why is it okay to feed total garbage to an older child when you wouldn't do that to a baby? Why do people feed things to children that a trainer of a championship racehorse would never consider feeding to the animal? Why? Because what you eat is directly connected to how you feel, to how you behave, to your health, to your ability to focus. You know, we're made out of food. If we don't get it, we don't do so good.
That you just explain everything so well, as usual, and you make everything seem like it really is doable, and I love that about you.
Thank you very much, Carl. It is, because I'm really a very lazy person. Now, another thing that, you know, we talked about, what's wrong with the system? Well, the advertisers in magazines, on TV, et cetera, they have an awful lot of clout. And who are the advertisers? You know, what ads do you see over and over and over again? Well, one of my colleagues has always said that the more heavily advertised a product is, and this would apply to medicine as well as food, the more heavily advertised it is, chances are the more overpriced it is. Because, you know, you may see loads of advertisements for that fluorescent cereal that only cost the manufacturer a tiny amount of money to make it, and then they charge, you know, the ingredients in the cereal are worth very, very little, and then they charge a highly inflated price. Well, advertising is expensive, and they have to pay for it. Now, ultimately, who pays for that advertising? It's the consumer who pays $4 for a box of cereal that's worth really little or nothing. So the more heavily advertised something is, the more leery you really should be. Because I don't know about you, but I haven't seen any ads for broccoli lately.
No, that's one you don't see. Let me ask you a couple more questions about your website before we finish. Now, this school-lunch.org, is this a Feingold site?
Yes, it is. We put it together because we've collected, over the years, we've collected so much information about practical things that schools are doing. We've written so many articles to really let people know what's going on. It's not as mysterious as it would sound. We wanted to have a particular place where we could put them, and we even organized a petition that people can sign, regardless of where they live, that's being directed toward Northern Virginia, the folks who have the silly putty cheese quesadilla. There's so much information and good experience and solutions. Mostly there are solutions. And one thing that I try to get teachers to think about, and others who are interested, is just to close their eyes and remember that school food used to be just plain old food. Now, not every school had food that tasted good, but it was still real food. There wasn't a whole lot of artificial this and that. There certainly wasn't any silly putty in the food. If you think back to plain old ordinary food and the ladies with the hairnets making the cookies and mashing the potatoes, it was different back then. If a teacher could have a class of children who functioned the way kids did in the 1940s and 50s, you know, this would be a wonderful opportunity. You know, this would be what teachers want. They want to have a class of kids who can sit still, pay attention, and be their real selves, and not be sedated with a drug or out of control or unable to even make eye contact. I taught school for just a few years, and when I taught, I wanted the kids to be able to hear what I was saying and to be able to interact with them. I don't know how anybody can be a teacher today trying to work with kids whose minds are all over the place and sometimes whose bodies are all over the place, who aren't able to sit still or focus or remember or function. I think it's a hard job at best, and I would think it would be an impossible job. But when you change the school food, behavior changes, focus increases, kids who had been in special ed. We have stories of kids who had been in special ed going into the gifted program.
Wow.
It's that dramatic. And, you know, just ask any parent at the after Halloween if the kids really get into their stash. Now, I'm not talking about natural candy, because a lot of kids can eat a lot of natural candy and not go wild from it. Some will go wild with too much sugar. But the average child is going to collect a big stash of pure junk, and if they eat a lot of it, not every child will react the same way, but there are going to be an awful lot of hyper kids bouncing around. And it's as simple as paying attention to, gee, after they drink that purple slushy, they act different.
Mm-hmm.
Or after they, you know, pig out on the candy corn, they act different. They can't pay attention. They are whiny. They fight more easily. They get upset too easily. It takes forever to get them to go to bed. Then they wet the bed that night. You know, maybe they have night terrors or nightmares. You know, there are so many ways that different people are affected by eating petroleum. Petroleum's not very good for us.
Well, let me ask you a couple more questions.
Sure.
First of all, have you ever been in contact then with, I think it's Chef Ann Cooper, who I think is maybe the more popular.
The Renegade Lunch Lady. I have sent material to her. I don't know. And actually, I've written about her starting back when she was a chef on Long Island, where she provided wonderful lunches for both a private and a public school. There are some great people who are doing good work in this. One of the sad things is that very often people will look at the Feingold program and say, oh, well, you guys allow sugar. Oh, we couldn't do that. I couldn't go that way. I'm not talking about Ann Cooper necessarily, but this is the reaction we very often get. You know, and I've tried to explain to people that we're about halfway between the Twinkies and the alfalfa sprouts, that this is not the perfect diet. This is the baby step. This is the simple pre-K nutrition that, you know, I don't care how junky a person's diet is. You can do Feingold. I can do Feingold because I never had to give up chocolate. one of my colleagues told me that before she learned about Feingold, and as a matter of fact, before she had children and while she was pregnant, she would typically eat 3 fast food meals a day. 3 a day.
Wow.
Not a week. She would go through the drive-in here for breakfast, the drive-in there for lunch, and the other drive-in for dinner. Now, she's a Feingold mom. She has no problem with it. So you can eat better food, not perfect food, but you can still find convenience foods, snack foods, candy. You can eat out at restaurants. You can have whatever you want, but in a better version. And then once you make the connection, oh, food really matters. You know, if I put the mac and cheese mix with the white cheddar in my shopping cart, I'm not going to have a child who melts down, you know, after dinner tonight. I'm going to have, you know, normal behavior or good behavior. If I put in the ice cream that has, you know, the mint chocolate chip ice cream that isn't green, which it should never be. If you buy the mint chocolate chip ice cream that's white with natural ingredients, you know, you're going to feel better. Your spouse isn't going to get migraines or asthma or hives, et cetera. I mean, once you make the simple, simple connection, but just switch. Buy the potato chips without the BHT. Buy the crackers that really are natural, not the ones that just claim to be. You know, this is where the Feingold Association helps people. And once you make the switch and you begin to see what enormous benefits you get, and sure, you want a cake mix, well, buy the Duncan Hines dark chocolate fudge cake mix that doesn't have the artificial flavor instead of the devil's food cake mix that does have the artificial flavor. Once they make these simple changes and they see what benefits they get, then they really start to buy into the recognition that food is really important. It's not just something to fill an empty place. It's what we're made out of. And so you go back to the same person's house 6 months later, and you find, gee, they're using whole wheat bread, and They're steaming their vegetables now instead of opening a can of peas or just skipping vegetables altogether. You know, people will, once they recognize this and see how easy it is, then they're going to start making more changes on their own, and you're going to find they're going to experiment with brown rice, and they may even plant a garden. But they'll do it at a gentle pace, which is right for them. All this is easy, it's doable, and again, the big plus for me, chocolate is allowed, as long as it doesn't have fake vanilla or vanillin.
Well, I'm so glad you made that point, because we've talked about this before, how, you know, I've come to realize that, you know, some families may never go full bore into the Weston Price lifestyle.
Sure.
And hopefully they'll move more and more toward that as they see the power of food and what they put mm-hmm. in their cart, you know, as they take the baby steps, and then they can start to make more food homemade and incorporate mm-hmm. healthy fats and find better meats and,
absolutely.
And better dairy. I'm hoping that they will all move to that, but some just probably never will. So I
That's
think
true.
That these
That's
baby true. Steps are a really smart idea to at least get their kids off the chemicals, and mm-hmm. maybe, you never know, somebody who you think maybe never would, they might see that power and feel the power from what they put in their cart and be ready to make those changes.
I think so, exactly. And another thing that's very beneficial, I'm very familiar with the Weston Price protocol, and I admire it tremendously. I'm not there. I'm just not able to get all the way there. But I've learned an enormous amount from it, and I've learned all about the fats. It's the fermented foods and the fact that I don't have easy access to raw milk, which I would be very happy to use if I had access to. But the fermented foods, not really my thing, but I've certainly learned a tremendous amount about fats and about just eating. I mean, this is just eating plain old-fashioned good food.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the benefits that causes like Weston A. Price will achieve when we do the work that we do is our members will understand. They may not be ready to do it, but they will understand what you're doing and the value of it, and they will be, you know, ready to open up to it. Some folks will go much further than I've gone, but just having the understanding of people, people who get on Feingold, they may have started out as convenience food queens,
mm-hmm.
but in a short while, they understand about good fats. They understand about vitamin B3. They even understand about why it's important to avoid plastics, you know, in our drinking bottles, or why it's important to recycle things. It just opens people up to a whole new world of recognition and understanding. They realize that genetically modified organisms are probably a pretty scary thing. So first and second grade isn't the only thing a person needs in their education, but it's an important part of it.
Right.
And anybody can do Feingold. Now, there are different, you know, levels of willingness that people have to go much further than Feingold. Some people never go any further than Feingold. Other people, like our family, you know, we're continually tweaking our diet
yeah.
and improving it.
And so are we. You know, we have a
yeah.
ways to go, too. I mean, I think everyone's kind of just on a journey and
right,
and
right.
just growing. So, but tell us this. So with Halloween coming, I'm not sure if I'll get this posted before Halloween, so someone may
sure.
hear this afterwards. But anytime, really, you know, we still do the candy, although every year it kills me more and more. All the
we give out candy. Yeah,
so,
we give out candy, but it's natural candy.
So that's what I'm going to ask you. If my readers and if, you know, if we want to find out, you know, where is this list so we
mm-hmm.
can see what Feingold says is okay and what is something we should definitely avoid, where
sure.
how do we get a hold of this list?
Well, actually, the list is really part of a rather large book listing thousands of brand name products that are acceptable. They would want to go to our website, ADHDdiet.org, and they will learn more about the things that we provide. We provide a food list book. We provide a newsletter and updates. We provide a handbook, a fast food restaurant guide, information on finding supplements, mail order items, access to our members' message board. These are all part of a package that people can sign up for and that they can purchase from us. But for somebody who simply just wants to get healthier food, they'll find loads of information on our website. Now, here's what I would suggest. even without the food list, even without the fine gold materials, there's a whole lot they can do. If there's a Trader Joe's or a Whole Foods nearby, wow, you've really got it made. Now, not everything at Trader Joe's is free of artificial colors, flavors, and preservatives, but most of the things are. And the candy that they put out under their own name, this is what I'll be giving out this Halloween. Whole Foods, of course, is a wealth of stuff. But, you know, go into your supermarket. Look for chocolate. If you're a chocoholic, as I am, look for chocolate without vanillin, fake vanilla. And go to Walmart, go to Target, go to Costco. You'll find lots of natural things there. Ghirardelli chocolate is available all over the place. There's a little peppermint chocolate-covered peppermint patty called Pearson's mint patties, little individually wrapped patties. I can get them at Walmart here. They're like York peppermint patties, but the Pearson's are all natural. Most supermarkets have an awful lot of chocolate things that are okay. The problem usually comes with things like suckers where you have the coloring. In that case, you'd want to go to either a natural food store or the natural food section of your supermarket, or you can mail order these things. One of our members has a mail order business and a candy shop just devoted to natural things. There are so many things out there. You can even, I've seen natural lollipops at Bed Bath and Beyond, you know. So,
how did you know those were natural? Like, what did you look, what was on the ingredient label? Or what
right.
Was that?
Well, that's a very good question. The simplest way to screen out the baddies, as I like to call them, is look for color followed by number.
Okay.
Look for red, 40, yellow, 5, blue, 1, you know, green three, red three, et cetera. Look anytime you see color and number. That's your tip-off. That's an artificial dye. Now, when you do read the ingredient labels, and by the way, bring your reading glasses, look for things like colored with grape skin extract or turmeric or annatto or maybe even cranberry juice or blueberries, et cetera. There are natural things that are naturally colored. We'll list things like that. You may not be familiar with what annatto or beta-carotene is, but it is not a color plus number, so it's okay. Many people, many companies use caramel, which is pretty well tolerated by our members. So color plus number is the key.
That's only the color, so how do we know that there's nothing else bad in there?
Well, after you see that it doesn't contain the colors, the synthetic dyes, the color plus number, look for vanillin.
Okay.
It's like the word vanilla, but it ends with an I-N, vanillin. So that's why you would buy the Ghirardelli bar instead of the Hershey bar. But, of course, look carefully at the Ghirardelli bar, too, because if it has a filling of an unusual type, it may have the additives in it. So the dyes are easy, color plus number. The pure vanilla, you want to stay away from vanillin. Then anything that says artificial or imitation, stay away from that. And naturally, if you open the package and the stuff glows in the dark, you know it's pretty bad.
Some common sense, too, huh?
Yeah, stay away from sugar-free.
Okay, yep.
That's usually that means aspartame, although it can mean many different things.
And high fructose corn syrup.
I personally stay away from high fructose corn syrup. You know, one of the sad things about this whole sugar, synthetic sweetener, high fructose corn syrup, one of the sad things is that starting years ago, a lot of nutrition-oriented people really began to bash sugar. Now, I'm not going to tell anybody sugar's good for you, but the things that took its place are so much worse that so many people started giving their children diet this and diet that and started drinking the diet sodas thinking that sugar was the bad guy and that the synthetic sweetener was okay. There are even schools that will not allow regular sodas, but they do allow diet sodas.
Now,
talk about jumping from the frying pan into the fire.
Yes.
So, you know, years ago, we ate sugar. I ate lots of it. Ask my dentist. as some folks are now saying who have a much more moderate perspective, they're saying eat all the junk you want as long as you make it yourself.
Yeah. I think
That way
that's a,
you're not going to eat that much.
yeah, I think that's a lot better. It's not ideal, but it's a lot better than the norm right now.
Absolutely. Well, we have had such remarkable results just taking people off of the worst of the additives. I mean, it's another problem we've had is that some folks who are very nutrition conscious absolutely cannot believe that something as simple as getting rid of food dyes could make a profound difference in a child's behavior and learning. But I'm here to tell you it does.
If they had a kid who they saw the difference with their own eyes, then they'd be convinced.
And we operate on what really happens in real life, not what a theory is. Now, of course, once the child gets established on the Feingold diet, then they become calmer. Now, this is typical, maybe not 100%, but most of the children who go on our program, we have found, will become calmer, more rational, just, much, much easier children to deal with. And then you can start kind of tweaking it and cutting back a little bit on this or that. Another thing that happens when you start improving a child's diet and do it in the way that we recommend is that they begin to actually taste real food. A good example is my daughter. She was so accustomed to food that was highly sweetened that the natural food without enormous amounts of sugar didn't taste sweet to her at first. But within a very short time, her taste buds adapted, and foods that previously had not tasted good to her did. Here's the example. Before we got on Feingold, if you had given her a cupcake, she would literally lick the frosting off and throw away the cupcake because the cupcake did not taste sweet to her. After we'd been on the diet a few months, I remember baking a cake. And this was back before Trader Joe's and Whole Foods was around, and I don't bake anymore. I don't need to. Anyway, I baked a cake. It's a very simple recipe we use in Feingold. I baked a cake. I set it out to cool, and I forgot about it. And later in the day, I remembered it, and I came back to the kitchen to frost it, and my two daughters and husband had eaten most of it. And it not only had no frosting, but I had actually cut way back on the sugar. Well, it tasted sweet to them. So your taste buds adapt. One of the problems that the children have when they eat the additives is food dyes rob your body of nutrients. There's research showing that when you eat something with yellow dye, it uses up the zinc in your body. Uses up too much of it. I certainly don't think it uses up all of it. But it uses up zinc. It robs your body of zinc. Now, zinc is connected with your taste. So when children stop eating petroleum-based dyes and other additives, we think what's going on is that their body now has sufficient zinc and their taste buds are going to work a little bit better.
Wow, that is so interesting. You know, I could talk to you all day long.
And I've been talking all afternoon,
I
haven't I?
should probably let you go now because my kids are all home from school now
Sure.
and they're starting to go crazy out there, but I literally could just talk to you for a whole day. So
Well, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I appreciate you putting up with my long discourses. I've been doing this for a long time.
Oh, but you're so interesting, so I really appreciate your time, Jane. It was good to talk
My
to you.
pleasure. Thank you, Kelly.